Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Patients put a lot of trust in their doctors, but they can also feel intimidated or tentative or misunderstood during interactions with their physician. And despite their best efforts, doctors aren't always adept at communicating. Dr. Kevin Jones, a surgeon and researcher at the Huntsman Cancer Institute, explores the dynamics of doctor-patient communications in a new book. And today on the program, he joins us to talk about the questions doctors can answer, which ones they can't, and which ones they should. Dr. Kevin Jones is a surgeon and researcher at the Huntsman Cancer Institute, as well as an assistant professor in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at the University of Utah. His new book is titled What Doctors Cannot Tell You: Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. And Dr. Jones joins me here in studio. Dr. Jones, good morning. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Dr. Kevin Jones will read from his book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You, tonight, July 11th at 7 p.m. at the King's English Bookshop, 15th South, 15th East in Salt Lake City. We'll have details on that as we go. Later on in the program, we turn to a conversation with BMX racer Ariel Martin, a Utah native who's headed to the 2012 Olympics in London. But first, talking with your doctor. What do you expect when you go in to see your doctor? What should you expect? You can give us a call with your stories. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Dr. Jones, I want to start with a story, the way that you start your book. It's about the only time you've been fired by a patient. His name is Carl. Why did Carl come to see you?
Carl came to see me with a very complex situation to begin with. He had a tumor in the groin, for lack of a more medical term, and the question was that we were addressing whether he should try to save his limb, and this was a very important question, obviously, to him and to me. The challenge was that it was quite technically possible to save his limb. I wasn't sure that the limb that would be saved would be all that functional for him, and I wanted him to understand this decision, that it wasn't a just because we can, we should kind of a situation, and it was too much for him. Mm-hmm. That decision, even contemplating, you know, I could choose to remove my limb, was really tough on him. This had been after a very difficult course of trying to come up with a diagnosis where were multiple pathologists involved. I mean, there are other backgrounds to the story, but ultimately it came down to this was a decision that he was not comfortable shouldering at the time.
In your acknowledgments at the end of the book, you say you don't begrudge Carl for firing you, but I guess what's the takeaway for you on this interaction with this patient? I mean, what did you take from the conversation that you had with Carl?
Well, you know, for me, I don't begrudge him because he needed to do what he needed to do, and I was quite all right with that. It's interesting. He ended up seeing my partner, and my partner took great care of him, and it was good. My partner was very upset. I was new in practice at the time. He was very concerned that this patient was choosing to leave my care, and he tried to argue with the patient, convince him to come back to see me. And ultimately, I said, you know, this is fine. This is what he needs to do. I'd much rather he feel comfortable with his overall experience over there. But what I really learned is how powerful words are. You know, we have these conversations with our physicians, and certainly they matter, and we're talking about things that are very important to us. But even just how we phrase the conversations can be powerfully impactful.
Let's turn to the title of your book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You. So what can't doctors say?
Doctors can't tell you what they don't know. It's that simple. And the question is will they tell you when they don't know? I'm often astonished. I'm sort of a, for lack of a better term, end of the road physician. I mean, people come to me. I practice on a postage stamp of the football field of medicine. But people come to me after they've often seen three or four other physicians along the way. We treat very, very rare forms of cancer, and I'm surprised how often a patient will come into my office having seen three or four physicians who have documented very clearly in their notes that they don't know what's going on. And the patient will come to me and I will see them. And at the end of the conversation, I will say, you know, I can't explain this part of it, or I don't know this. And they'll sit almost awash with relief, saying, thank you for saying that. No one has said that to me. And you think, how have they not said that to you? My goodness, you know, they said it to me in their notes. It was clear that they didn't know. But I think physicians often don't say this to patients when we just don't know.
Do you think that's something that patients expect from their doctors, is not to know? Or do you go to the doctor because you want an answer?
Exactly. I think that we go to physicians expecting this incredible technical know-how. I mean, my goodness, they went to school for how many years? You know,
right.
They ought to know something awfully fancy. And so we often put our physicians up on a pedestal and assume that they're sort of all-knowing minor gods. And they're not. They're people. They have a lot of knowledge about some specific area, and they usually can be very helpful, but they don't know everything. And even medicine doesn't know everything. I mean, this is not just about human frailty and foibles. This is about, you know, the full know-how of the textbook, if you will, is not complete. It's far from complete. It's amazing, you know, when they look in studies about how many decisions that physicians make that are truly guided by what in medicine we consider the best evidence, the best studies. In cardiology, which is probably the most evidence-based of any medical specialty, it comes in around 10 to 15% of their decisions can really be guided by what we would consider level one evidence. And that's as good as it gets. You know, the rest of us are making educated guesses. They're often very educated guesses, but they're guesses nonetheless.
But you can't expect 100%.
You can't. There's nothing. The best thing I know in medicine, the most successful procedure I'm aware of, and this is, you know, in a lot of ways of studying it, they've come up with this, is total hip arthroplasty. This is one of these, I consider it a slam dunk of an intervention. I don't perform it that often, as I'm mostly a cancer surgeon now, but I certainly did during training. And even this is a, you know, 95% of people are happy with it. That still means 1 out of 20 is not happy with it. Mm. You know, and that's as good as it gets.
Speaking with Dr. Kevin Jones, he's a surgeon and a researcher at the Huntsman Cancer Institute, as well as an assistant professor at the University of Utah. And he's written a book. His new book is titled What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. When patients have a certain expectation, when doctors know that expectation, it can get a little squishy when you go into the doctor's office and, you know, it's ripe for miscommunication. Why did you write the book? I mean, is it to set doctors straight and patients straight? I mean, who's your audience here?
Well, I think both. You know, I really worked hard to try to make it accessible to patients and physicians. And I tried to do that by using mostly stories. Because we all can understand stories. And really, I started writing about medical uncertainty, about the things we don't know. I had a professor in residency, and he and I would often discuss cases, and at the end we'd end up shrugging our shoulders and saying, you know, we don't really know. And so I started writing about that, and as I wrote, I realized that the biggest problem is not what we don't know, because that is an ongoing battle that's not going to go away anytime soon. But it's how do we communicate with people about it? And how clear are we about what we don't know? And how do we explain even what we do know? I mean, again, what we know in medicine, we know on a population basis. But we apply it one person at a time. So if someone has a 30% chance of having something or other happen, it's either going to happen 0% or 100%. But we talk about the 30%. And I think that's very confusing in our communication with patients.
What are some of the other common pitfalls that come in this communication arena between the patient and the physician?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems actually is confidence. And of course, we all want competent, confident professionals looking after us when we have a medical problem. But sometimes that confidence actually gets a little bit in the way. Sometimes the confidence is misplaced. And sometimes to appear confident, to comfort patients, to make them feel positive and comfortable with their experience, we will put forward much more confidence in our technology than it really deserves. And not that we should all be wishy-washy, mealy-mouthed, and, you know, say everything's horrible, but I think sometimes we almost turn into selling what we have. And that's not, you know, that's not trying to get political and saying that, that things are either financial or not, but we often speak about our technology in medicine as if we're used car salesmen, you know, trying to sort of gloss over the uglier points.
Speaking with Dr. Kevin Jones, a surgeon, researcher at the Huntsman Cancer Institute and a professor, assistant professor at the University of Utah, talking about his new book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Mark is joining us from Salt Lake City. Mark, hi.
Yes, I'm had questions. He mentioned about the statistics for total hip replacements being really very successful and a slam dunk in medicine, and I thought that was pretty interesting. I wondered what he thought about total knees and about how many procedures are done, and I've heard in medicine that maybe 30% of what is done is unnecessary. How many of total hips are unnecessary? How many of total knees are unnecessary, and what really works? I'll take my answer off the line. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for the call. Dr. Jones, there's that percentage thing again.
Yes. Yeah, we love percentages in medicine. So it's interesting. I mean, certainly the book is not a technical book about specific outcomes of specific procedures. I brought that up as an example. But I think actually the comparison of a total knee replacement for a total hip replacement is a fascinating example. We consider these almost, you know, the same sort of technologically. Yet they are very different. Total knee replacement is usually a more painful experience. The success rates of total knee are lower. They're still excellent. It's still a wonderfully successful procedure, but they're more like 90%. And what's interesting is that a lot of the people who undergo a total knee replacement, who end up being unhappy about it, are probably people who too aggressively pursued it in the first place between that person and their physician, in that they got it a little too early in their course of arthritis. So if you look back on people who have had a total knee and are unhappy, and you look back at their original radiographs, they often don't have that much arthritis. And it's a common problem that we find when we are a bit over-aggressive. Sometimes our procedures work less well.
Hmm. Mark, thanks so much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Speaking with Dr. Kevin Jones, a surgeon and researcher at the Huntsman Cancer Institute, assistant professor at the University of Utah, and his new book is titled What Doctors Cannot Tell You. You mentioned earlier this book is full of stories. I mean, it's anecdotal through what you've learned in the doctor's office. And one thing I thought was a good point. I mean, you wrote that unspoken words can be as powerful as what is actually said. And you recount this story of a woman, a mother of a young man named Ewan. And she had become very intimate in his care, almost an expert. I mean, she was going down the protocols, asking you if she did this and that and the other, almost wanted a guarantee, a recipe for success if she followed these protocols to the T. And as you put it, you didn't choose to clarify that critical point. So silence in some ways could be conveyed as assent. And I guess I'm wondering why you stayed quiet.
It's interesting. You know, here you have a mother of a patient who's just been diagnosed with cancer. She's scared out of her wits and should be. And she understood the bit of our conversation where I explained that while we win more often than we lose, we still don't win as much as we'd like. And then she just makes the very subtle association with, oh, well, those failures must be failures to comply with the protocol.
They didn't follow
the
rules.
Yeah, they must not have been as diligent, and I can do this. To some extent, you know, I want her to be able to feel positive about this. I want her to be able to comply with the protocol. That is very important. That's how we get to that slightly better than half, you know, success rate with that cancer. And it is a challenge to know when in this performance of medicine, in these discussions that we have, one should completely crush hopes with numbers, and when one should let someone, you know, have the hope that they're relying on. I I think that it is critical to be as honest as we can, but that is a very difficult line to draw in the sand.
Hmm. In hindsight, did you make the right choice in that case?
You know, certainly with that mother, that was not the only conversation that I had. I had a number of other conversations over the time, and sadly for that particular patient, things did not go well in the end. And what was very interesting is that this mother, in the end, very much appreciated how much the other physicians and I were very frank with her. And as much as a lot of the conversations ended in tears, she was very satisfied that we had been clear as much as we could.
Speaking with Dr. Kevin Jones, he is giving a presentation of his new book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You, tonight at 7 at the King's English Bookshop, 1511 South, 1500 East, here in Salt Lake City. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. Let's go back to the phones, and Nick is joining us from North Salt Lake. Nick, hello.
Hi, Dr. Jones. I read your book, and it's a fantastic read, and I really appreciate what you've done. I was wondering, you mentioned earlier how you had a number of patients come to you who've seen multiple doctors who have not given them clarity or acknowledged their limitations in medicine. I was curious how your colleagues have taken this book in terms of, emphasizing or showing how sometimes doctors don't know everything.
Well, it's a good question, Nick. Thanks so much for the call. Dr. Jones, what do your colleagues in medicine think about, we're not omnipotent, we don't always get it right?
Yeah, so I'm sure that there are a very few physicians who will be torqued at me for writing this book, but I think most have responded with I wish that my patients would invite me down from the pedestal. You know, I wish that they would ask me some questions so that I can level with them and be clear. I think there are few professions that have as many well-intentioned people as medicine. And so I think most people have responded very positively and with a sort of, yes, this could really help.
Nick, thanks so much for that question. 801-355-TALK is our number. Speaking with Dr. Kevin Jones about doctors and patients and more effective ways to communicate in medicine. He's written a book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. And he'll be giving a presentation on that tonight at 7 at the King's English Bookshop here in Salt Lake City. If you'd like to join our conversation, what do you want to know about improving communication with your doctor? You can give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Doctors aren't always 100% sure of diagnosis. They can be overconfident, and they aren't always clear. But patients don't often ask the right questions or admit when they don't understand. But physician-patient conversations are a critical component in the healing process. So how should you approach these sensitive communications? Today on the program, we're learning about how to talk with your doc and the uncertainty that pervades medicine today. Joining me in studio is Dr. Kevin Jones. He's a surgeon and researcher at the Huntsman Cancer Institute, also an assistant professor in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at the University of Utah, and he's written a book about this, What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. He's reading from the book tonight at the King's English Bookshop here in Salt Lake City. We'll give you details on that as we go, but we invite you to join the conversation if you like. Have you had an awkward interaction with your doctor? What could you have done differently, or what would you like to know from your doctor but are afraid to ask? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Let's go back to the phones, and Tom has been holding from Bountiful. Tom, hi.
Hi. A reporter friend called me, said, you got to call in this morning. I've been at a disadvantage. I haven't heard the show until you locked me in on the phone. But what my reporter friend was explaining, you know, what your guest is talking about falls right into my experience, my understanding. Decades ago, I worked in the medical profession, and I will tell, you know, anybody, doctors and nurses are kind of a victim of information denial as well as the patient. And the doctor can't tell you what he doesn't know, but my experience was, having worked in pathology, the pathologist knows far more than anybody in that system. But a lot of times what he knows is not routed out or provided for the patient or even the physician that's serving that patient. So we are extremely limited in what the doctors and nurses know.
And so you're saying because they only know a slice of the picture, they absolutely cannot relay what they don't know.
Right.
I see.
See, 22 years ago, I was diagnosed with terminal malignant melanoma cancer, and I'm still alive. And the reason I'm alive is because I had access or was privileged to understanding in that disease issue that other people generally wouldn't know of. Now, what was surprising to me when I was diagnosed with my terminal malignant melanoma, and I had a breast, abdominal, and a groinal mass, that's the best way I can describe it, along with the mass that was in my back and that reached up into the base of my neck and brain. Nowhere in the processes of them treating me for that did anyone discuss the issues of diet or lifestyle. And I knew from my work in that lab, you know, in my day, that the primary defense against a cancer happens to be your own immune system. Hmm. And there's very little, if any, discussion that ever occurred, you know, with the physicians that were dealing with my problem about nutrition, rest, exercise, attitude. You know, so the primary energy, unfortunately, that a doctor is educated with is to drug, you know, and what you call radical treatment, rather than getting the patient to change his lifestyle.
Tom, I think we've got your point. Thanks so much for the call. Dr. Jones, I mean, this is a point that you sort of touch on in your book. You approach a patient as an oncological surgeon. I mean, you are an orthopedist, so you're looking at it from that angle. What you may see may differ widely from what a radiologist will see on the same patient. And so you're kind of having to put a puzzle together, and that's, I think, Tom's point is, you know, there's only one piece that a specific doctor is looking at.
Absolutely. You know, in cancer care specifically, and certainly Huntsman Cancer Institute is big into this generally, but I think most big cancer institutes are, is the use of things called tumor boards or multidisciplinary, you know, treatment conferences, where you try to get the radiologist and the surgeon and the chemotherapy specialist and the radiation oncologist and the pathologist all sitting in the same room going over cases, not simply writing each other notes in the medical record. And I think that really sort of the multidisciplinary discussion of cases has really improved consistency in care.
Hmm. Tom, thanks so much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Let's take another call. This is Joe calling from Midvale. Joe, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Interesting topic. I'm an EMT. I work with a few people here privately. And I noticed that physicians and pharmaceutical companies really kind of kick out the patient when it comes to this dialogue. What have you found in your research when it comes to the influence of pharmaceutical companies and communications between patients and doctors?
Well, Joe, just to clarify, so are you saying that a drug company will come to you and say, this is a great solution for the patient who has X. Please communicate this to them. And since that's the only thing on your radar, that's the first thing that comes to your mind and you recommend it? Is that?
Well, I hear a lot of patients saying, well, I saw a commercial. This sounds like it'll help me with sleep. And they go to the doctor, and they basically are telling the doctor what's wrong with them. And I don't, being raised by my grandparents, I don't see any dialogue like it used to be with the doctor calling the patient or the doctor being in charge. That's, I'm starting to see more of the pharmaceutical companies being in charge, and now the patient goes to the doctor asking for a pill or some sort of therapy.
Sure.
And I'm, so I don't know. Have you encountered that in your research? Or?
Joe, let's get an answer for you. Dr. Kevin Jones?
So, you know, I think that one issue that is becoming a very prevalent issue, as Joe brought up quite astutely, is this direct-to-patient advertising that pharmaceutical companies and implant companies are certainly doing. They've been advertising to physicians for a long time. But I think the other issue that it harkens to is, you know, how much information should I get from the internet before I go and see my physician? And I encourage people to get information from the internet, understanding that much of the information on the internet is actually an advertisement. So you have to be very careful of that. It's going to have a heavy bias. And I just think the key is a conversation. I mean, as Joe brought up, sometimes those aren't happening. And if you bring information from the internet to your physician, don't come and say, this is what I want. You're seeing this physician, theoretically, because the physician has spent a lot of years learning how to do what you're asking her or him to do. And so ask an opinion. Say, you know, I read this. I found this article. Bring it with you. Bring it to the doctor's appointment and say, what do you think of this? And most of us in medicine should at least be reasonably skilled at sifting information. And that's that is sort of our job. And so bring us the information and let us look at it and say, you know, this is actually an advertisement from a company, or that's a great article. I haven't read it. You know, let me read through it and get back to you. You know, I mean, that you may enlighten your physician, or your physician may enlighten you.
Joe, it's a good point. Thanks so much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. It does beg the question, though. I mean, where is that balance between a conversation and a demand? I mean, your book is chock full of questions that patients could potentially ask their doctor. But I guess I'm wondering, is there such a thing as asking too many questions? And how do doctors take, you know, an inquisitive patient? Are they considered pushy, or, you know, put them in the defensive in some way?
So I think that's a very important point. So there are about 70 questions in the book. Please don't go to your next appointment and ask 70 questions, or they'll all be like hunting me down or something. No, I think the idea of these questions is that, you know, a patient finds a question that works for them. They bring that one question to their physician. The idea is to change the character of that interaction, not necessarily ask 20 questions, but to change the character of the interaction from a salesman sort of standing between the patient and, you know, the blighted and blemished wares of medicine behind the salesman, versus a teacher standing next to the patient saying, yeah, here's what we know, here's what we don't know. This is the fuzzy part. And I think that, you know, some people say, well, I'd be too afraid to ask these questions to a physician. But if you have a good teacher and you're a good student, you'd ask questions of your teacher. You know, you still respect that teacher. And I think that looking at physicians as teachers a little bit different than simply providers of technical care, I think is a useful way to look at it, because then you will ask questions because you want to know, you need to know, you need to use their knowledge to teach you how to get through this.
Let's go to Gary, who's calling from Salt Lake. Gary, hi.
Hi. Move the conversation to a little different point. I've had ankylosing spondylitis, a form of arthritis, since my 20s. I'm now in my 70s. So I've had seen a lot of doctors. I've had one surgery, a lot of treatments, and I discovered that I need to be very aggressive in asking questions, and in also keeping records of everybody I've seen and what they've decided, and especially any MRIs or X-rays that I've had. I discovered many years ago that LDS hospital where I've had my first x-rays, they were disposing of them because they were too old. So I asked them to give me all the films they had that I could take home, and then I just kept them. And I still have those, and, you know, doctors can reference those. And then fast forward to the 90s, I was considering surgery on my back, and I'd go into the third surgeon to get an opinion. I sent him all my history and the films that I had before my appointment, and when I arrived, it was clear, and talked to him, it was clear he hadn't looked at any of it, and just said, "Well, we don't do surgery for back pain." I said, "Well, there's evidence of spinal stenosis on the X-rays that I sent you. What X-rays?" Well, he races out and finds them, puts them up, and says, "Oh, looks like you are a candidate for surgery." So, you know, could he have found copies of those somewhere? I don't know. But my feeling was, you know, it was up to me to provide this kind of information so that he could make, you know, a really informed decision.
That's a good point, Gary. Thanks so much.
He wasn't taking the initiative to look at this even before he talked to me.
Sure. Gary, thanks for your thoughts on that. Dr. Jones, your thoughts?
You know, there's no doubt that I think patients need to take as much responsibility as they can for their care. And certainly, if you have a complex medical problem and you're seeing a number of different physicians, you know, over days and weeks or years, you should keep records of things. It helps the physicians do a better job. Because I practice in a field that is often that kind of a situation, I love it when my patients have all their records in one place. I encourage my new cancer patients to get a notebook they can keep in their pocket where they write down questions as they think of them, because they might think of a question for the chemotherapy doctor while they're talking to me, the surgeon, or they might, you know, think of a question for me when they're talking to the chemotherapy doctor. So I think absolutely patients taking responsibility for their care is a really important point.
One of the questions that you suggest patients ask is, will you tell me when we reach the point where you don't know?
Yes.
Has a patient ever asked you that?
I wish they had.
Why?
You know, because I think this is the biggest sort of invite the physician down from the pedestal. And just level with me, you know, just tell me when we're going to reach the point when we don't know. And obviously, you know, this is worded in a specific way, and I doubt anyone would use that specific wording. But I think physicians know this. I mean, we know that there are places in every case where we eventually get there and we say, we're lost from this point on. We're totally guessing. And sometimes we tell patients when we get at that point, and sometimes we don't. And I think inviting your physician to say, "Oh, okay, it seems like things are getting a little unclear here. Where are we really? You know, are we in that realm of total guesswork now, or are we still pretty confident that this is reasonable? And most importantly, what is our backup plan? You know, when along this course do we say this really isn't working and we need to go back to the beginning and start over? That's really critical. I think so often patients will be banging their head against the wall, taking some medicine that's not working or this or that, And sometimes they get so disillusioned, then they just give up. And they'll say, "Well, I'm going to go take herbal remedies, or I'm going to go see somebody else." Or when oftentimes what they ought to do is go back to that same physician and say, "You know, this isn't working. What can we do to take 10 steps back and start over?" And yet, because it has not been presented as a conversation, because it has been such a sort of dogmatic, "This is what we're doing," and sort of clipped statements, I think they often don't feel welcomed to come back and say, "Hey, this isn't cutting it."
Hmm. Our time is short, but I want to bring in one last call. This is Leah calling from Salt Lake that seems to be right on point. Leah?
Hi. I'm a local pediatrician, and reflects back on a comment you made a little while ago. One of my mentors during residency used to say to me, you know, don't be afraid to refer to yourself. Where if a patient asks a question, you say, that's a fantastic question. I don't have an answer. Let me read about it, get back to you. Or why don't you try these few things and we'll follow up in a month. I'll learn more about this. You learn more about it and we'll meet back. And I really do like to use that in my practice now because, you know, some things are an emergency and you need to deal with them that day. But a lot of things you can wait a couple weeks and say, let's all get to know a little more about this, both the parents and me as a pediatrician. So I just
Leah,
like that comment.
Has that approach changed your... relationship, your interactions with your patients?
You know, I think they really appreciate it that I call them a few weeks later and say, hey, how are things going? I read a little more about this. Do you want to try this approach? I mean, it can be about behavioral things. It can be about health things. Obviously, as a pediatrician, we see, you know, a huge range of parental concerns about their kids. And I do think that the patients really appreciate that phone call a couple weeks later, kind of out of the blue, like, oh, I read this great article. You should try this.
So, from your experience, you don't think it somehow undermines your authority as the local pediatrician?
No, I don't think it does. There's certainly, you know, times where I feel like I'm confident that I know the answer. We need to do this right now. But there are other times where it's a different question. It's a different problem. Every child is different, and, you know, we all need different approaches. And I think the time that it really helped me the most was in the beginning of my practice when I felt a little overwhelmed and new to being a general pediatrician, and with, you know, keep that in the back of my mind. Don't be afraid to refer to yourself. You know, give it a couple weeks, talk to the patient again on the phone, see if we can come up with a plan that works best for the family and best for the patient.
Leah, thanks very much for the call. And Dr. Jones, it sounds like her experience is right up your alley.
Absolutely, yeah. My kid's pediatrician will open the textbook right in front of us. I love that. I love it when physicians are humble enough to say, you know, let's just look this up, or come with me, let's go look this up on the internet. It's fantastic. So,
speaking with Dr. Kevin Jones, he's a surgeon and researcher at the Huntsman Cancer Institute. He's also an assistant professor in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at the University of Utah. His new book is titled What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. And he'll be reading from the book tonight at 7 at the King's English Bookshop here in Salt Lake City. And Dr. Jones, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Coming up next, a conversation with an Olympian with local roots, but first a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.